Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have our good friend, IQ Al-Rasuli, with us today. He has been on vacation the past 2 weeks. And in an email yesterday, IQ indicated that he wanted to talk about a position on an issue that I have felt quite alone on. I am not positive that he will take the same approach, come to the same conclusions that I have. But the issue is the United States of America jabbering on about how awful Putin is for his annexation of Crimea, recognizing that the Crimeans voted of their own volition, 97% to 3%, to rejoin the country that they had been part of for the last 300 years. And that based upon America's invasion of countries where we killed many people and never gave them the opportunity to vote as to whether or not they wanted us or not, that we really were complete hypocrites in condemning Putin in this regard. The U.S. Congress is opposed to my position. They voted 399 to 19 yesterday to condemn and to sanction Putin. In fact, there's only two members of Congress that spoke out in favor of what Putin had done and against the United States rhetoric. Well, IQ Al-Rasuli has more at stake here in this discussion than I do, because he was born in a place that America invaded, Iraq. With that introduction, IQ, welcome back. It's good to have you on the program again.
Thank you for having me, and I'm glad to be back fighting mood.
Oh, good. What is your assessment of America's rhetoric against Putin for annexing Crimea versus America's invasion of Iraq, and how do you compare those two things?
As usual, Obama screwed up again in geopolitics, and this time with Russia's Putin, whom he thought was a walkover like Gaddafi of Libya. I find Obama's actions and those of the Europeans astoundingly stupid, because they were trying to bring into NATO what was once a Warsaw Pact nation, thus threatening the very security of Russia. Mm-hmm. And they truly believed they would get away with it. Mm-hmm. Obama keeps repeating the mantra that Russia's occupation of the Crimea is against international law. Really? What international law? Whose international law? That of the Arabs? The Muslims? Or the despots of Latin America and Africa that represent almost 80% of the United Nations? After all, most of the Crimean people are either Russian or pro-Russian. And the first move by the Ukrainians, who overthrew a legitimately elected government, mm-hmm, with Obama's blessing, mm-hmm, was to remove Russian as a second language, mm-hmm, thus literally precipitating the chain of events that caused them to lose the Crimea, and most probably, in my opinion, not so humble, they might lose the eastern part of the Ukraine to follow. Mm-hmm. Why was Obama attacking Libya, not against international law? Why are Obama and the Europeans more worried about the Crimea than a nuclear Iran? Why is Obama extremely obsessed with the Arab-Israeli conflict than with the implosions in numerous Arab and Muslim countries and his loss of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the Gulf states to Russia and China? Because of his love affair with the mullahs of Iran. Each and every act by Obama results in enormous damage to America's geopolitical standing, its economy. It is literally a continuous disaster in waiting. On Wednesday, Obama sought to debunk the criticism that America has acted hypocritically in condemning Russia's action in Ukraine, dismissing any comparison to the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003. He said, even in Iraq, America sought to work within the international system. In a major foreign policy speech in Brussels, he did not claim or annex Iraq's territory. We did not grab its resources for our own. He's lying. Iraq is fragmented into three parts. It has no democracy. America did not give Iraq anything. It destroyed Iraq. And he went against international law. He didn't have the certification of the United Nations.
Correct.
He did not have the certification of the United Nations in Libya. He circumvented the Congress. And he is claiming that Putin is a criminal. I believe that Obama is more of a criminal. Why? At least Putin is protecting the national interest of Russia, while Obama is dismembering and destroying the national interest of America as we speak.
Yep.
What do you think, sir?
I'm in complete agreement.
The thing
that I like about Putin, and there's issues with Putin that I'm not crazy about, but for the most part, the perspective of Vladimir Putin is that he is committed to doing what is best for Russia. He's a nationalist. Obama is not a nationalist. He has no interest in doing what's in the best interest of America. His commitment is to do what he thinks should be done in the world. He has far more interest in shaping a world order than he has doing what's best for America. And routinely will say that he is committed to, is committing America to aid and abet the will of the Ukrainians. We have no idea what the will of the Ukrainians are. I mean, you had some 5,000 people who were rioters that camped out in a square throwing Molotov cocktails at their government buildings and forced the popularly elected president out of the country, threatening to kill him. That's not the will of the people. You know, and when the will of the people is expressed as it was in Crimea, then we call that illegal. It is astonishing that we even care about Crimea. Why would the United States offer $1 million in loan guarantees and then be the largest contributor to another $25 billion to bail these people out? Recognizing that $25 billion is going to last a year, maybe two, and then they're going to be dependent again? It was in the Ukrainians' interest. It was in America's interest. It was in Russia's interest. It was in everyone's interest that this failed attempt at independence that the Ukraine has gone through the last 20 years be reversed. It should be reintegrated into Russia. I mean, that's the reality of it. It's in everyone's interest, except the globalists who want to control everyone's lives as if they were pawns on a chessboard. And in the United States case, you're right. When we attempted to gain international support in the United Nations for our invasion of Iraq, we lied. General Powell was there with his slideshow showing all of the weapons of mass destruction he alleged that Iraq had. And none of them existed. Everything was a lie. And then George Bush got on the floor of the U.S. Congress and his Secretary of and his State of the Union address said that he had proof that Saddam Hussein had smuggled in tons of yellow cake uranium and that the smoking gun was going to be a nuclear bomb. And he knew it at the time was a lie. We invaded Iraq based on a pile of lies. We didn't have UN approval. We didn't go through the international community. And we broke that country. We left it devastated. Rather than fighting a war on terrorism and reducing terrorism in Iraq, we increased it a millionfold. I mean, the last country on earth that ought to be tongue-lashing the Russians is the United States.
I agree. By the way, the latest report coming from Iraq, it is the worst country to live in. Literally, the most devastated country on the planet.
And that's saying something when you consider what...
To go to work, they don't know whether they will come back alive.
Right. And consider what it's like to live in Somalia, in the Sudan, in Yemen, and Syria today. Consider what it's like to live in Egypt today. And for Iraq to be the worst place on earth to live. I mean, look what we had to do to break that country. We left it devastated. We left it a living hellhole for terror. And what's the worst part of Iraq is that we gave Iraq to Iran. That we enabled the Iranians to complete their nuclear ambitions. That we artificially empowered Shia Islam over Sunni Islam. And we started thereby this Syrian proxy war. And the United States, you know, we want to condemn Russia for supplying arms to the Syrian government. And yet the United States is supplying close to $100 billion worth of weaponry a year to Sunni Muslims.
He is now authorized to supply the opponents of Assad anti-aircraft missiles, which they will be used against the Western nations. These weapons will be used against civil aircraft in Western nations, starting with Israel.
Yeah, you know what's amazing there is that Obama today is with the warlord who runs the personal estate, the fiefdom of Saudi Arabia. It's a personal estate. It's not a country. And the Saudi Arabians despise him. And they despise him because of the fact that it was the United States, and they don't hold him accountable for invading Iraq and giving Iraq to Iran, but they do hold him accountable for capitulating on Iran. They hold him accountable for drawing red lines in the sand and then not responding as it relates to the Assad government. Now, if he had responded to, which he wanted to do, and Putin stopped him, in terms of bombing Damascus, but had he sent cruise missiles over the Russian fleet to bomb a Russian ally, we'd be in World War III right at the moment. And so we all owe Putin an enormous debt of gratitude for keeping the world out of this war. But the Saudi Arabians despise him. So for him to offer missiles, he's trying to curry favor again with those who don't trust him. Welcome back to Saturday Miss. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, who's the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. There is a liberal in Congress. He is a representative of in the state of Florida, obviously a Democrat. He's somebody that conservatives love to loathe. Here is his statement as he complained bitterly as the House Foreign Affairs Committee drafted its Russian sanctions bill on Tuesday. The man's name is Alan Grayson. This is what he wrote, IQ. Why are we speaking about naked aggression? Why are we speaking about stealing Crimea? Why are we speaking about bullying? Or the new Soviet Union, or thuggery, or audacious power grabbing, or bully bear Putin, or Cold War II, Mr. Grayson said. We should be pleased to see, when an utterly bloodless transfer of power establishes self-determination for 2 million people somewhere in the world. End quote.
Superb. You don't need to add to it. Yeah, the most frightening fact is that the very leaders in the USA and Europe who are supposed to protect their people are the ones who never read Muhammad's Quran and Islam, nor the history of Russia, the Crimea, or Putin. And yet, they are there making decisions that will end us all in World War III.
Yes, you know, immediately after we saw the riots materializing in Kiev, the first thing that I did is I wanted to kind of understand a little bit of the history. And one of the first thing that you recognize is that in the Ukraine, that these people have never been independent, apart from the last 20 years when they broke off from the USSR. The Ukraine has never been an independent country. So we're not talking about people with a long history of independence that were somehow brought into the USSR by force. That's not the case at all. The second thing that I learned is that for the last 300 years, the Ukraine has been part of Russia. So the situation in the Ukraine would be no different than Abraham Lincoln deciding that he was not going to allow the South to secede from the Union and would be willing to sacrifice 600,000 American lives to forcibly keep the South as part of the Union. If Russia had decided to use force to keep the Ukraine, it would have been no different than what Abraham Lincoln did. But he didn't. The next thing that I learned is that Putin was not impressed by the hooligans that camped out and threw Molotov cocktails and killed police and were so vicious in Kiev. He referred to them saying that they remind him of the pogroms. You ever heard of a pogrom?
Yeah.
You know that the pogroms is a Russian word that speaks of extreme violence and that the Ukrainians are worse than Muslims, the most viciously anti-Semitic people on earth. And that they have hunted down and brutalized hundreds of thousands of Jews. And that the Jewish population in Ukraine has gone from 6% of the population to about 0.1%. As the Ukrainians have literally brutalized them. The Ukrainian police would go into a Jewish home, not only rob them of all their possessions, but take infants and spin them around in the air and bang their heads against the wall in front of the parents, killing them. And that's what Putin...
Babi Yar in Ukraine, that 30,000 Jews were shot dead by the Nazis. It was mm-hmm. Ukraine, Babi Yar.
Yes. But before that happened, before the Nazis found sympathetic Ukrainians to massacre Jews, the Ukrainians were massacring Jews all on their own long before World War II and the rise of Nazi Germany. This propensity to hunt down and brutalize Jews began before even World War I.
Yes, Khmelnytsky was the 19th century or so.
Yes.
I mean, these massacres, as you said, were perpetrated, and the pogroms were in Russia.
Right.
This is where the word comes from Russia.
Right. And what I came to realize is that when people are this grotesquely immoral, and they're continuing to be so, because in the last 10 years, there's been a complete departure of the Jewish population of Ukraine. Essentially, all of them have left. And when you recognize that the way people treat Jews is often the canary in the mine shaft, it tells you about the moral decay of a civilization. It was the canary in the mine shaft that was ignored that led to World War II. It will be the same for World War III. We ought not be helping such people. Welcome back to Chattering Miss. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, who is an Iraqi living in Europe, an expert on the geopolitical conditions that are manifest around the world. And as we compare Iraq to Crimea, I have a few questions for you, IQ. Crimea was for centuries part of Russia. Was Iraq ever part of the United States?
No, obviously not.
The Crimea is adjacent to Russia. Is Iraq adjacent to the United States?
Well, 7,000 miles away, adjacent.
Okay. In Crimea, 70% of the population is Russian. What percentage of the Iraqi population is American?
Zero.
All right. In Crimea, they held a vote, and 97% of the population asked to be annexed into Russia. Was there a vote prior to the American invasion of Iraq?
Not by the Iraqis, nor by the Americans either.
Yeah. Now, when America invaded Iraq, it obviously didn't go in to protect its national interests. It obviously didn't go in to because it was part of the United States, because Americans were at risk. So it had to justify its reasons for going in. The claim that America used was that there were weapons of mass destruction. Were there any?
They couldn't find any.
Not one. Never found any?
No. Nope,
I mean, it wasn't like it, you know, this had this huge amount of weapons of mass. They didn't find any. Now, when America was in Iraq and we could actually poll the people, we never asked them to vote, but we could actually poll the people, you know, the Iraqi citizens, what percentage of Iraqis were glad we were there?
In fact, at the beginning, most of them were glad because they honestly thought they were getting rid of a despot called Saddam Hussein. They never realized that Saddam Hussein was a gift for them. That's a tragedy. Today, when I talk to Iraqis, my compatriots, whether they are Muslim or Shia, they say, God, Allah, may Allah bless the soul of Saddam Hussein. At least we had security.
As that war moved on into its second and third year, and you began to have the first glimpses of this proxy war between Sunni and Shia Muslims in Iraq, and that Iraq became the most plagued nation on earth in terms of Islamic terrorism. If you held a referendum at that time on the American invasion, the Americans were still there, what percentage of Iraqis would say, boy, we're really glad you're here. You've really done us a tremendous service.
I don't think more than 0.1%.
Yeah. And how long did we occupy Iraq?
What was it, 8 years?
Yeah, almost a decade. And when we left Iraq, did we leave Iraq better than we found it or worse?
Well, Obama left it better, I mean, worse than he found it, even under Bush. He did not leave not enough secure armed forces from America to let them actually democratize themselves. By the way, I'm using this word democracy only for the benefit of Americans who are listening. I want them to understand, it is impossible to have a democracy under Islamic law. It doesn't exist. Why? Because Islamic law believes in Sharia, and Sharia belongs to Allah, and anything which does not belong to Allah is illegal and unacceptable.
Right.
That is why no Muslim country can ever have democracy.
Matter of fact, both the Quran and the Hadith say explicitly that their Muslims have no choice. They cannot choose, that Islam has been determined for them, and they must acquiesce to their religious, military, and political leaders. Both the Quran and Hadith are explicit in this regard.
Yes, but it seems it is obvious that our leaders and most our people, and I'm talking about our people in the West and in America, cannot understand this simple, fundamental, but extremely important item. They can't. They must be stupid. They really must be stupid. I cannot associate it with anything but stupidity.
Well, let's keep the stupidity.
It's explicit.
When Obama decided that he was going to bomb the Libyan regime, did we respond to elections in Libya where the vast majority of Libyans said, we want a democratic country?
Not a single one of them.
All right. Was there even polling in Libya that suggested that the Libyans would be better off if Muammar Gaddafi was killed?
No chance. Nobody could have predicted this. Nobody.
Did anyone vet the situation in Libya to determine who was trying to kill Muammar Gaddafi? Was there an American analysis of the Mujahideen that were riding around with 50 caliber machine guns in the back of their pickup trucks and they were shooting rocket-propelled grenades? Was there any vetting of them to determine whether they were freedom fighters or just run-of-the-mill jihadists?
They were jihadists. And Obama denied that they are jihadists and blamed it on a movie that never existed in reality. That movie was not known and was not shown on Arab television to cause the incitement. Obama lied. Hillary Clinton lied, and the military lied. Why?
Now you're talking about the Benghazi affair that killed four Americans, as opposed to the civil war as a whole. But the very decision to aid and abet the killing of Muammar Gaddafi and the bringing down of that regime, the very people that we helped were the famed jihadists that we were at war against in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yes, theoretically, we are against them. But according to Obama, they're our friends. That's why he supports the Muslim Brotherhood. What I can't understand, he said that el-Sisi, the military leader who took over from al-Mursi, who was elected democratically, did something wrong. And yet, in the Ukraine, the criminals were taking over an elected government, and he says they're all right.
Right.
The same president, so-called president, called Obama, says it's all right. Why the duplicity? Why the duplicity? Why is it all right when he is supporting the enemies of America, the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet it's not all right for Putin to defend Russia?
Because the United States and all of its leaders have become pure hypocrites. We're blaming Putin for going back to Cold War tactics, when it's in fact the United States that is embracing the Cold War tactics, that can't get out of their mind that Russia is not an American enemy, that are guilty of the very things that they are falsely accusing Putin of. It's the most debilitating tactic in any political discussion. And it's what all disgusting politicians do. They accuse their adversary of the very thing that they themselves are guilty of. So that when a discussion emerges and the adversary says, no, I'm not guilty of this, it's you who are guilty of it, then the average person is confused, and their single greatest vulnerability, which is in this case, it was the maneuvering of the West to fight a Cold War tactic, to take a Warsaw Pact country and turn it into a NATO country on Russia's border, that it was Cold War maneuvering by the West that brought this all about, and yet we want to accuse Russia of Cold War maneuvering, thereby projecting one's own faults on an opponent. It is pure hypocrisy.
Yes, and that is called what you just said, projective identification, and our friend, the slave of Allah, Muhammad, was one of the foremost authorities on this subject.
Yes.
He always pretended that the victims to be were trying to kill him. And he goes and slaughters them.
Right. That yes, exactly. If you ask a Muslim today, why did Muhammad lead 75 terrorist raids? Why was the Muhammad so vicious? And they'll say because he was trying to protect the first Muslims from the pagan armies. And yet, the Meccans didn't have an army. In fact, he never fought an army. Never once did he engage an army, nor was anyone ever out to get him. He was always the victimizer, never the victim. And so he projected his own flaws on his foes.
That's exactly what Europe and America is doing with Putin, and they're going to lose. They are going to lose. I'm not saying that Putin is a great man in the sense of democracy. Russia cannot be democratic. China cannot be democratic. Too gigantic. They never had democracy in 7,000 years of history. All of a sudden they want them to have a democracy. You can't do that.
Well, beyond the fact, my friend, that democracy is not a good thing. Democracy is simply mob rule. We're seeing the effects of democracy in America, where the majority are voting themselves a raise by taking it from the minority. Democracy always fails for that reason.
Yes, that's true. Absolutely true. Yes.
And so democracy isn't a good thing, and it is an impossible thing in the Islamic world. But Putin is a bit of a bear. You know, he is he's kind of a guy that, you know, it's almost like, you know, a bear hibernates. You see him in meetings. He appears like he's half asleep. Putin, it takes a lot to rile a sleeping bear. It takes a lot to rile Putin. But as we continue to demean him, as we continue to demean Russia, as we continue to slander them, what do you think this sleeping bear is ultimately going to do?
Believe me, Putin was never a sleeping bear. I like him. I like him because he doesn't open his mouth before he thinks and he thinks and he thinks, and it takes weeks before he opens his mouth. Unlike the commander in retreat, Obama, he opens his mouth before thinking and before having a solution. Putin is a thinker. He is a chess player. And the ones who are opposing him are midgets, pretending to be somebody else. I honestly believe he is preparing to take over the eastern part of the Ukraine if the West continues to try to humiliate him.
Yeah, and that's really the point I was trying to make, is that I happen to agree that Putin is the is one of the great thinkers of our time. His open letter that was published in the New York Times regarding the events of Syria and the speeches, the propaganda of Obama and of American elected officials, was easily among the most brilliant and accurate treatises I have read in a very long time. We'll return with IQ Al-Rasuli and our discussion of Crimea and Putin's next moves. Welcome back to Chattering Mess. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. We're talking about the future of the Ukraine. Immediately after the Ukraine began its series of riots in Kiev, one of the things that I did, IQ, is something I suspect you have done, which is to look at the racial and ethnic background of Ukrainians by region. And when you do that, you find that Russians represent less than 5% of Ukrainians in the north and in the west, but 40 to 50% of Ukrainians in the east and 70% of Ukrainians in the south, particularly in the Crimean Peninsula. So it was obvious what was going to happen. But, you know, I don't think Vladimir Putin would have would annex the eastern Ukraine if it hadn't been for this constant badgering by Obama in particular. And I think he is so disgusted. I think the Russian people are so universally disgusted by Obama that just to for no other reason to serve him right, they may now annex the eastern part of the Ukraine. They don't want the western or northern part of the Ukraine. To keep that part of the country afloat requires some $15 to $20 billion of aid every year. That's the last thing the Russians want. I suspect they may annex the eastern part of the Ukraine, although they would not have done so had they not been humiliated.
I agree 100%, but something else has happened. In the last few hours, the parliament of the Ukrainian government, the newly government, has been surrounded by thousands of far-right of the sector movement. The very people who overthrew the legitimately elected previous government. Mm-hmm. Their leader, a few days ago, was assassinated. I honestly believe Putin had a hand in it. He was not just killed, he was assassinated. It was a professional kill.
Mm-hmm.
And if it continues, this threat against the new government of Kiev, I honestly believe Putin will move in and take over the eastern part.
Yeah, I don't see the Ukraine as having a legitimate government. They ran their legitimate government out of town, and all they have now is a parliamentary vote for a temporary head of state. But they had no elective, no constitutional authority to do so. They had no mandate from the people to do so. I don't think there is a legitimate government of the Ukraine at this point. But I can tell you that a nation that is as focused on its own survival as Russia is not going to allow this kind of degeneration, this kind of anarchy, this kind of Western meddling on its flank.
Definitely.
Not going to allow it. It's way too close to Moscow.
Absolutely. Definitely not. Because Moscow had the experience of Germany, Nazi Germany. They nearly wiped them out because they had no territorial space to defend themselves. Putin is a Russian nationalist and a Christian Russian nationalist.
Yeah, the church
doesn't
is a fallen Russian.
Define Christianity in this case. He's a Russian Orthodox Christian. Whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, is immaterial. He is a nationalist. He wants Russia to be powerful again, and he will not allow anybody to undermine him.
Yeah. You know, imagine in the United States if we had China invest hundreds of billions of dollars in Mexico and promise the Mexicanos all sorts of weaponry so that they could be part of a Chinese alliance with them against the United States. Do you think the United States would stand by and allow Mexico to be the arm of China?
Under Obama, yes. I'm sorry to say that. Under Obama, yes.
Perhaps under Obama, he's such a hypocrite. But that's really what's happening in the Ukraine. The United States and Europe
Obama,
aided and abetted this crisis for the express purpose of positioning themselves as cold warriors in a place that made Russia feel vulnerable. And Russia's doing what it must do under these circumstances.
I'm glad we agreed. I'm so glad, because when you started the program, you said we might not agree.
Yeah, but there, in this particular case, IQ, there are so few individuals that have taken the position that we have taken. And I happen to concur beyond this, that the standoff here between the Europeans and the United States on one side and Russia and China now on the other is going to be a huge part of a world war that's all going to begin and emerge right out of Syria, where we also stand apart. We'll be back after the commercial break.